I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time to tee off with Dirt and Sprague.
The honor of teeing off, if there's a social hierarchy, the most important person goes first.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
This is the finely tuned athlete on the verge of greatness.
The Fans U.S. Open Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Don't wait for comfort with Area Heating and Cooling. Go to areaheating.com today, your local train comfort specialists. It's hard to stop a train.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Can I call golf, please?
What are they called?
Golf shoes.
The Fan.
All right, it is 12:02 in the Rose City. It is time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Johnson in with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Feeling good. It's going to be 85 degrees outside today.
It's going to be a nice one. I think it's going to rain tomorrow, but have you seen the forecast for next week?
I have not.
We are delving into temperatures we have not hit yet next week.
I don't trust week out.
You're not a week out guy?
Nope, not here.
Well, I believe the high temperature right now for next Wednesday is 98 degrees.
Bring it on.
Phenomenal band, too, by the way. A lot of hits back in the day.
Yeah, 98 degrees. Also a good spinoff show with him and Jessica Simpson.
There you go. Yeah.
Today is also my daughter's last day of school.
This is it, huh? This is the last day before summer vacation kicks in?
I don't know about all the Eastsiders, but the Eastside location that I'm at, that she goes to, this is the last day.
It's hard to find a day that was more exciting than this for kids.
Field day.
You think field day was better than the last day of school?
Do they still do that?
Yes, they do. She just had field day last Friday.
What do kids these days do in field day? Is it the same field activities?
Same thing. It's the parachute. It's the Red Rover, Red Rover.
The parachute.
Send Nancy right over. It is the tug of war games, class versus class. Look, last day is hard to beat in the sense of you have no school after that, right? But field day, I do believe kids enjoy more because you're at school. But everybody has, it's like a party.
Right.
It's a giant party, and then you go home.
You're just hanging out all day.
And then after that, you got like 4 days left of school, and none of them, no teachers care. Nobody cares.
Well, especially for her age, too. Because what, is she in kindergarten?
She's a kindergartner.
Yeah. So I don't think it quite hits you. You don't have quite the same summer enjoyment as a 5 or 6 year old as you do maybe as a 13 or 14 year old. I think it's a little more important. The older you get, you realize, hey, I now have 3 months off, especially when you're in that window before you can legally work and do things. So you got nothing to do all summer. Like once you get to high school, you're kind of screwed because most of us have jobs all summer and you're working. But when you're in that late elementary, early middle school age range, those are the glory days.
The only downfall is if you go to a good school, they will get summer homework. Now, some of it is optional.
You get like the big reading list.
What?
Yeah, she got a big packet.
She's a kindergartner.
I know,
but a packet of homework for the summer?
Look,
give me a break.
I have to play my odds here.
Color it in the lines? What do you even do at that age?
Indulge me for a second.
Okay.
Got the Bob books.
I have to play my odds here in the sense of...
Get out of here.
I was decently athletic as a teenager in high school, middle school, right?
Oh, humble brag. Let's get out of your way.
I said decent. I wasn't great.
Must be nice.
My wife is not.
Ooh.
She's probably not going to be a real athletic kid. I mean, she might. She could surprise me.
You got to get her playing golf, man. That's how you get the scholarship.
She's not interested at all right now. I'm going to have to wait till she's like 9
five.
Or 10.
Give her a couple more years. She'll get
she's
there.
She's 6, but thanks for knowing.
Sure.
She is 75%. Or no, she is 65% Asian.
Okay.
I'm going to play the smart card here, and I'm going to do everything I can to make this human as smart as possible and roll the dice on the academic scholarship.
So you're holding the thumb down all summer saying, do your homework, huh?
I'm not holding it down, but we're going to finish this packet. If she hits her reading goals, she gets a pizza party.
There you go.
So there's ways to entice them.
Okay, like you're giving her a pizza party or is it a school pizza party?
No, if you fill out the form, and we're really going to do it because I'm sure some kids lie, You fill out the form, you bring it back the first day of school, you get to be part of the big pizza party they
Ooh,
have.
Look
they
at
only
that.
Had 50 kids do it last year.
Wow, early year pizza party. Okay, a bit of a reward to start the school year off.
And you got to think about it. She started her first month off in kindergarten. She won Student of the Month. So she set the bar here.
Please tell me you got a bumper sticker to put on your car for that.
No, I didn't.
My kid was Student of the Month last month. That's
my
insert elementary.
Kindergarten was a Student of the Month.
All right, so you're playing that card. You're not going to go athletic route. You're going to go academic route.
I'll go whatever she wants to do more sports-wise, and then academics, we're absolutely going to be – let's take that seriously. Yeah. Let's focus there, and then if you want to play soccer or softball or golf, whatever the hell it is, play what makes you happy.
Right.
I'm not going to be overbearing sport parent. I will be the kind of nudging academic parent.
Like, hey, do your reading list here this summer.
Don't be like your father. Don't get to seventh grade and go, middle school doesn't matter to my college education.
Now, the question is, with her Student of the Month award, did she steal it? Or did she actually win it? Did she just come home?
Some would say it was an upset.
did she snatch it out of some other kid's hands and bring it home and say, Dad, look what I won? Was her name, like, typed in or was it scribbled in to the winner name list?
So the funny part about this is when she told us, the wife legitimately goes, do you think she's lying and took this? And I go, no, I think we're going to give her the benefit of the doubt right here. And we went to school, and lo and behold, there was a certificate, and her teacher was talking to us about it.
Now, I don't mean this to be degrading to the kindergarten education level and what you go through at that age in school.
Sure.
What do you have to do to win a Student of the Month in kindergarten?
Especially the first month, I really wonder that.
What kind of barometer are we setting here? How do you set yourself apart from the rest of the class?
You're responsible. You help the teacher.
Okay.
You are kind and caring of others, and you do your work when you're told.
And you don't eat the paste.
And you do not eat the glue.
Don't eat the glue, and you win
don't
an award.
Eat the glue. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Make sure you put those
glue
little glue eyes that you put on your puppets. Make sure you put them in the right area.
What is that with kids eating glue?
I don't know. I never got into that as a kid. Did you?
I don't think I ever ate much glue.
Did you guys have the old paste that you put on with like a popsicle stick?
No.
Not the squeezy Elmer's glue?
No, we had squeezy bottles.
We had the old paste you dipped in and it was, that's what kids ate.
Yeah, we were the Elmer's generation.
I still think the best route to go here is golf. That's where my two cents is going to come in.
Do you have any interest in like dance or gymnastics or anything like that?
She has some interest in gymnastics. How can I say this? Because there might be somebody listening.
Let's offend.
I know people that are in that kind of
dance gymnastic stuff.
You know, you could put like other sports. There's a category, it's a bubble.
Okay.
They do that, and I contemplate wanting to scream about how dumb it is.
With like the stage mothers and stuff?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I've been to a competition and I'm not exaggerating. I went and I said, hey, when are they up? They said, oh, not for another hour and a half. And I said, why did you tell me to get here by this time? They said, because it's a team thing and their age range goes from 6 to 14.
That eats up a whole day.
So it is a whole day's worth, and sometimes it turns out to be a whole weekend's worth because you've got to go to Seattle and you've got to go to Bend and you.
Well, now you got me thinking. Now you got me thinking. Is what sport has the worst parent?
Because
I get it. Dance mom's pretty bad, but we hear really awful. We heard some bad stories in
the
office. We heard
softball stories.
Softball parents for being bad.
I was an umpire.
Little league dad.
Yeah, coach come at
me. I have my own personal stories of like little football dads that were just, you know, hard ass coaches to like fifth and sixth graders. Like, what sport has the worst? Because I get what you're saying about dance mom and being there and that kind of stuff. Every kid's sport has that.
Right.
Unfortunately, there are too many parents like that in this world.
You know, that's a tough one because I have to mix this with my life and then what I've seen in my adult life. And I haven't experienced everything as like from an adult perspective. So like I haven't experienced football parent.
Right.
But I remember my coach when I was in fifth grade was the prime definition of what you would see on YouTube of what you would never wish your parent was like.
He's one of those.
He would grab his kids by the face mask because he was the head coach. They'd be crying because they're hurt. And he would tell them to shut the bleep up, take their tampon out, and throw them by the helmet onto the field. And I was in fifth grade going, wow, that was intense.
Let's go. Let's go hit somebody.
Nowadays, I think somebody would have to physically restrain that guy.
Yeah, I think that gets you put in jail nowadays.
Softball, I don't think is as bad. But again, we heard some pretty bad stories.
Yeah.
I'm going to maybe vote basketball. AAU, Dad. They're kind of slimy.
There's a slimy nature to AAU. But that's a little bit older in age.
Sure. Like
this is more, I'm thinking more along the lines of
kids.
Elementary school kids. We're talking 8-year-olds, dude. You know, that kind of age.
There's a little bit of baseball. My kid is better. You should be playing him more vibe. Yeah,
bat him lead off, you bastard.
Yeah, my nephew went through that a little bit.
I think I'd probably go football parent. I think football parent's pretty bad.
Football parent is pretty bad. One, you're putting your kid out in to tackle football. That's a whole questionable thing anyway. And then two, are you calm parent watching on the sidelines just saying, oh, that's cute, they have big helmets?
Right.
Or are you screaming, TJ, get the ball and go!
Right, right.
You know, how are you as a parent?
Yeah, I hope if I ever have kids someday, I do not delve into that realm. I hope I have the self-control to not turn into that parent. That's like my one goal in life. Don't be that guy.
It's not very hard not to be that guy. All right, let's find out what's on tap for today's show.
Dirt and Sprague know what's brewing.
I'm not paid to be bold. I'm paid to be right.
There's a lot of sporting events that you say, oh, I got to go do that.
This is What's on Tap, poured by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach on 1080. The Fan.
What's on Tap, brought to you in The Fan by Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach, online at pelicanbrewing.com. Justin Thomas doesn't look like he's a ton of fun.
I don't like Justin Thomas. He's too hoity-toity.
He kind of has that vibe.
That Ralph Lauren.
That country club.
Get out of
here.
You
shouldn't be here vibe.
Ritzy fritzy. Don't make any noise when I'm hitting my golf ball.
You know, I have no opinion on this one. I'm just reading. Somebody text in club lacrosse parents. You know, club sport parents too, like volleyball.
Yeah, when you get to that club level
soccer,
of a sport.
Soccer.
Yeah, no
it
good.
Can probably get pretty ugly. That's a good question you brought up. That's,
You got me thinking, because I know Dance Mom's pretty bad. I've seen TV shows. I don't have firsthand experience with it, but.
Okay, well, I didn't say it, but I was kind of hinting towards cheerleading parent.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. And that's what I meant. It was kind of in the same
cheer,
sphere.
Dance, flag twirling. It's in that category.
Flag twirling.
To get her into that, can you get a scholarship to do that? Like when the band, when they're performing and you got the gals out there twirling the flags around?
Oh, I was thinking more like Will Ferrell's character in Old School when he does the dance routine.
The streamers.
What are those called?
I don't know.
Rhythmic gymnastics.
There you go.
Gymnastics.
I don't know that. No joke. I had somebody tell me this past weekend that he knew a gal. She just shoots an average 85 golfing. That's her average score.
Oh, only.
Well, I mean, you know, she got a full ride scholarship to a D2 school.
God, that's a good
to
life.
To play college golf.
It's a good life.
That's what I'm saying. Get her in the mid-80s, and we got a future here, kid.
Might have to do that. Those Asian genetics could kick in well. She's smart, could be good at golf, focus. Let's do this. All right, we got a good show today. We'll get into the end of the Golden State Warrior run. Yes, we actually have some light at the end of this tunnel, believe it or not.
That's what you think.
I actually am totally buying into this. Kobe Bryant giving LeBron James advice, and some people don't like it. Other people think he is dead on. We'll bring that to you today. We've got Kevin Patra of NFL.com. We've never had him on before. He's an NFL.com writer, covers the league, and he just wrote a story, 28 storylines for NFL minicamps. We want to go around the National Football League, so we saw that article, and we thought that'd be fun. So Kevin Patra is going to join us today, NFL.com at 1 o'clock. Good news for NFL fans with a video that surfaced. We've got Julio Jones holding out. We'll talk about that. NFL true or false. Brett Favre created the RPO, and it's quite enjoyable listening to him describe it. We've got Heisman odds, and I don't want to talk about the odds per se. I want to talk about more how the Pac-12 is kind of underrated in this sense. So we'll talk about that today at 2 o'clock. Bronco Mendenhall doing something no college coach ever really does, and I love it. So we'll have fun with that one. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, and at Brandon Sprague. That's what's on tap for today's show. And we'll start with the Warriors. The light at the end of the tunnel, the dynasty could be coming to an end. and it's exactly how people thought it would. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, our Coors Light poll question of the day. With Dirt and Sprague, listeners engage on the Fan Twitter page of ours, at Dirt and Sprague and at 1080 The Fan, and respond to our daily poll question. We put up multiple usually. So this is almost, we should make this plural, our Coors Light poll questions of the day.
Yeah, and I upset Oregon State fans. I apologize in advance. My mind doesn't go to certain events that I am not as engaged in as you are.
Well, I didn't know you were doing this question. I might have been able to help you here.
You could have been, yeah.
But you're not college baseball guy. So apologies to college baseball fans out there, Beaver and Husky fans.
They have received five tweeted write-ins. Votes, so yeah. They got a couple of write-in opportunities.
Well, they'll play each other, by the way, if they win their series.
Which should actually be pretty fun.
Yeah.
A little Pac-12 action.
A little Pac-12 going to the championship on the line. So it's not in there, so apologies. Let's start with that one, at Dirt and Sprague. Let's rattle off the poll questions we have, our Coors Light poll questions of the day.
Well, that one is, what event are you most excited for in the next 2 weeks? As we mentioned, forgetting the College World Series, the three options we gave you were the U.S. Open, the World Cup, or the NBA Draft, which, believe it or not, is next week. And that's going to sneak up on all of us, as it does every year. So those are your options. We also asked, what championship parade would you rather be at right now? The Capitals, the Warriors. I want to know why 16% voted for the Warriors. And then the last one is, what Pac-12 player would you lay your money on right now with the odds out to win the Heisman? Bryce Love at 5-1, Justin Herbert or Khalil Tate at 14-1, or Jake Browning at 20-1.
All right. Where's that at right now?
40% go with Bryce Love is the top answer.
Yeah, I almost think Bryce Love is worthy of his own conversation in a way. I think we forget that he's coming back, by the way.
And shockingly, so far, 37% of people saying the U.S. Open is the event they're most looking forward to.
I think this U.S. Open, you know, I'm not super golf guy, get up for the majors. I think this U.S. Open has a really, really good field. I know it's the same field you've had for the other majors, but I just think when you get to this point of the sports year, you know, baseball's going on, but football's kind of dead. Basketball, off-season storylines, but nothing actually being played. People enjoy this tournament. And I think you look at the field right now in golf, this is as deep as they've ever been. And I think for that reason, it's pretty exciting to think about who could win.
Plus, you're playing on one of the most iconic courses in the United States, certainly yep. on the East Coast. It's right up there with Pebble and
Shinnecock.
Shinnecock Hills.
That's
Shinnecock
right.
Right out there on Long Island.
It might be stupid. I might be throwing it down the drain. I'm considering laying some money on Tiger this weekend. He doesn't have them. Like, when he was going into the Masters and he was the odds on favor kind of stuff, that was way over the skis. But 22-1, I mean, there's decent value in that. He played well in the last tournament he was in. He seems close to putting together four consecutive good rounds of golf as long as he can putt. I'm entertaining the notion in the next 24 hours of putting.
I don't know if Dustin Johnson's in the top 10 in fairways and regulation. I don't know who can beat him. Coming,
yeah.
Boy, he played last week.
He won it last year, correct?
No,
DJ. Oh no, it was
Brooks Koepka won it last year.
Which one did he win? The Masters or the PGA?
I want to say DJ won the U.S. Open 2 years ago.
Two years ago. And then he came.
3 years ago was Chambers Bay.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then I think it was 2 years ago.
He should have won back to back. Unbelievable. He does really well at the U.S. Open. All right. Well, I already screwed myself out of this. So there's our poll questions, our Coors Light poll questions of the day. Go vote at Dirt and Sprague. Can I read you a quote real quick? And
go
then
for
we'll
it.
Get to the Warriors. This is non-sports related. This is a life question. Now, I find it both helpful and corny when people put out quotes from successful or very wise individuals.
Motivating quotes.
Like sometimes the quotes are like, yeah, get me going. And
all right.
Other times I'm like, okay, cool.
It gets you going for about 36 hours and you forget about it and go back to your lazy ways.
This might be one of the dumber ones I've ever read.
Okay.
This is from Warren Buffett, who I actually quite respect a lot. He said, read 500 pages every day. That's how knowledge works. It builds up like compound interest. All of you can do it, but I guarantee
not many of you will do it.
No, Warren, I will not read 500 pages a day.
Who the hell has time to read 500 pages a day?
That's a long time. Unless you're a speed reader. What's the average page length of read? Like, how long does it take the average to just one page?
Speed reading 500 pages still takes like 2 hours.
It's still going to take a long time. 500 pages, that's like a Game of Thrones book. Are you kidding me? Who's got 8 hours to sit around and do that?
Like half the Bible.
I'd get 38 pages in and I'd fall asleep. I'd even stay awake through 500 pages. That's ridiculous.
The response to this has been quite comical. How many tweets equal per page?
Yeah, how many online articles can I count towards that? Text messages.
Yeah, I mean, we don't read
emails.
We don't read like that many. We read good, you know, we read a lot of articles for our job, but 500 pages? I was thinking, how long would that even take me today? If I really set out, I ignored fatherhood, job, and I just woke up and said, I'm reading 500 pages today, and I started at 8 a.m. What time do I finish?
For 500 pages? I think you could get it done in a work day. I'd give you 5 p.m.
You'd give me 8 hours?
If you stayed consistent and you kept going, I think you could do it in 8 hours.
Who can read 500 pages straight?
That's a long-ass time to be reading, but I think you could get it done in a work day.
I don't know, man. I think I'm out on that. Sorry, Warren Buffett. My compound interest of knowledge is never going to happen.
That is one of those. I have the...
there's no way, by the way, he does that.
No, there's no way.
If he does, he's a crappy parent.
No, there's no way, Warren. Not buying it. That is one of my New Year's resolutions. I'm not a big resolution guy. That is one I always try and tell myself is I want to read more. And every single year it falls by the wayside. I can usually get one book in. Like, I'll find a book that I'm really interested in and I'll dive into and I'll read the whole thing. And then I'll be like, all right, here we go. I'm off to a good start. And then I won't buy another one, or I'll buy another one and it'll stay on the nightstand, or I'll put it in the dresser and it won't come out. Next thing I know, 3 months have gone by and I haven't read a page of
it. Well, I buy a book at the start of pilots because I find reading a book on an airplane, a physical book, makes the time seem to go faster than worrying about a video or music or anything else. There's something about burying your head in a book. For some reason, the flight seems to go faster.
It's the only time I read consistently is when I travel.
Yeah.
Every time you travel, you got to have a book.
Yeah, I need a movie because I don't want to listen to anything because I'm afraid of flying. So when I'm reading, even if I'm really into the book, I will still hear the side noise and you get the turbulence and all that stuff. I can't deal with
that. Somebody said, yeah, 500 pages takes at least 3 months if I'm focused. At least 3 months.
Have you ever read a 500-page book?
I mean, probably one of those Harry Potter books was probably like 800 pages towards the end. Those things were damn long. I didn't read it in one day.
One I read last season, it was pretty thick. It was the guy who was the head of the NSA and CIA during George Bush's presidency. And because I don't do fiction, I love nonfiction and stuff like that. And it was really interesting about how the intelligence community actually works and not what you hear on CNN, Fox News, and all that sort of stuff.
The last one I read that was probably that long was Lincoln. The Doris Kern Goodwin book, that was probably the last, and that one was close to 1,000 pages, and it took me forever.
You know the solution to your resolution problem?
Yeah, what do you got?
You just do what I did this year. You join a book club. You create a book club.
I'm not going to do that.
Why? I'm starting a new book right now.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I've read 4 books this year. It's been great.
That's good for you.
Well, then I guess you don't really have a resolution, do you?
No, I don't.
Smart ass. All right, let's get to this. Let's do Kobe Bryant. I'd rather do Kobe Bryant before the Warriors. Kobe Bryant has some words of advice for LeBron. Should Kobe really be the one pointing this out and saying it? We'll tell you what he said next on 1080 The Fan. In your grill,
trying to get you to a hotel. Howard Beck of Bleacher Report wrote an article about LeBron James and greatness, and he went to a few different people for this. Chauncey Billups, Paul Pierce, Kobe Bryant. To name a few. And Kobe's comments are really standing out in this article. One question Beck asked all the guys, LeBron has 3 rings. He's been to more finals than any player in modern times, but he's 3-6 after this series. Does that matter to his legacy? Kobe said, all I thought about as a kid personally was winning championships. That's all I cared about. That's how I valued Michael. That's how I valued Bird. That's how I valued Magic. It was just winning titles. Now everybody's going to value things differently, which is fine. I'm just telling you how I value mine. If I'm Bron, you got to figure out a way to win. It's not about narrative. You want to win championships. You just got to figure it out. He also was asked about the supporting cast and if LeBron, does LeBron get credit for carrying Jordan Clarkson, Smith this far, or penalized for losing with them?
Kobe said, Michael Jordan gave me some really good advice after the 08 finals. You got all the tools. You got to figure out how to get these guys to that next level to win that championship going into the 2010 series. I said, listen, Boston, they got Ray Allen. They got Paul Pierce, Garnett. They got Sheed. Talent is there. They're stacked. This was the first super team. Michael kind of heard me lament about it, and he just goes, yeah, well, it is what it is. You got to figure it out. There's no other alternative. And that's the challenge LeBron has. You have pieces that you have to try to figure out how to work with. Excuses don't work right now. It has everything to do with how you build the team. How do you motivate them? Leadership is not making guys better by just throwing them the ball. That's not what it is. It's about the influence you have on them to reach their full potential. So LeBron James, according to Kobe Bryant, says, stop making excuses. You just got to get it done. You got to win titles.
Get it
done.
Be a better leader. LeBron, all right, come on. Get it done. Beat this Golden State Warrior team that everybody seems to believe is unbeatable. I read through this piece. I thought it was interesting that he interviewed a handful of former players. Some of the all-time, I mean, Vince Carter was in this. Isaiah Thomas was in this. Yeah. So Joe Barry, I think, was in it.
John Barry.
There's a handful of guys that are in this, and some that are in the all-time great category of players. And every single one of them, even Paul Pierce, who is about as anti-LeBron as anybody on this planet, even Paul Pierce, like, owned up to the fact of, I mean, what's he supposed to do? Give me a break. I mean, he's not going to win this series. This doesn't fall on his shoulders. Kobe was the only one that really took shots throughout this thing of saying, it's about your ultimate finals record. That's all I cared about. Yeah. All I cared about was winning. I don't care if you just get there. You have to seal the deal, and you have to win an NBA championship. To me, that reeks of one of the guys that's in the all-time great conversation that's trying to make himself seem better than LeBron because he had a better NBA finals record.
Well, his name's really dirt. You bring up the all-time great stuff, and I know LeBron can be nowhere near it for some, and other people, he may be there. But the Kobe stuff has really been picking up steam, I'd say, for like the last year and a half. I know a handful of Kobe fans and Laker fans in my life, and they send me stuff all the time, these dumb memes pointing out what Kobe did and how he's better than LeBron. And, you know, some players will even go, they'll gasp at the fact that you don't think Kobe's in this conversation.
Right.
But if we're being real, is he really there?
This is a guy that got Shaquille O'Neal and they won 3 straight championships.
Sure.
That was a dominant core. We know it as Blazer fans because we saw it firsthand.
Right.
You go back and you look at the teams that they beat in the NBA Finals. None of them come anywhere close to the Golden State teams that LeBron has had to play now. Was it 4 consecutive years, whatever. And the San Antonio teams that he had to play when he was in Miami and the first time he was in Cleveland. Beating New Jersey, Indiana, and Philadelphia.
The Warriors would have swept all 3 of those
teams. None of those teams are in the same league as some of these that LeBron has had to go against. And the fact of Kobe that is undeniable against him is that he had Shaquille O'Neal. They won 3 straight championships, and then it came crashing down when they got Gary Payton and Karl Malone, and they lost to Detroit. Then Shaq goes to Miami, and what did Kobe do? What did the Lakers do in that window before Pau Gasol came over?
He called his teammates bums. He quit in the Phoenix series and threatened to leave if he didn't get better talent.
How many finals appearances did he make without Shaq before Pau Gasol got there?
0.
None. Then they get Pau Gasol, and what happens? All of a sudden, they're a legitimate team again, and it just simply proves you have to have talent around you if you want to have a chance to win championships. I mean, you go back and watch, especially the one they got Orlando in the second time around when they beat the Magic, and then when they beat Boston, a lot of that series, especially late, was Pau Gasol. I mean, he was in the prime of his career. He was unstoppable. He could score from all over the floor. They had Lamar Odom, who was a great point forward and in the prime of his career as well. You had Ron Artest, a great perimeter defender who could lock anybody up all over the floor. Derek Fisher was a great three-point shooter and always seemed to come up clutch when they needed him to. And you had a young superstar in Andrew Bynum who was coming into his own at that moment. That was a loaded Laker team.
That was a very good Laker team.
And I think it's important to know, like, this whole LeBron legacy stuff, I get so tired of this conversation, but the one fact that you would just have to point out, the guy's been to 9 NBA finals in his career. 7 of the 9 times he's been the underdog. Mm-hmm.
The 2011 one, I mean, that's inexcusable.
The only one that is inexcusable, that they had no reason to lose, was the Dallas series.
Right.
Outside of that, all of them make sense. Those Spurs teams the Spurs team that he lost to was a dominant team with Kawhi Leonard coming into his zone. The first time around, they had no chance. And then this Golden State team, this team that he's now had to play in 4 straight NBA finals, they have the best winning percentage in the history of the NBA over a four-year span.
It might not even be close.
Might not even be close. Yeah. And he's it's just give me a break. Like, stop it, Kobe.
Bomani Jones tweeted this out. So I have one of my best friends is a huge Laker fan. He's a bandwagon Laker fan, which is why I give him so much crap. But I remember telling him when they beat Boston, he was getting so mad because I was telling him, I'm like, dude, you stand zero chance to win that series without Pau Gasol. And I'll be honest with you, I think Pau Gasol was just as valuable in that series as Kobe. And it would really upset him because he's a big Kobe guy. Bomani Jones tweeted this out yesterday. And I just got a chuckle out of it after reading that Kobe piece. Fun fact I didn't know until now for the advanced stat types, Pau had a higher win share than Kobe each season from 08 to 12 when he was on the Lakers.
Yeah.
From the first time in 08, Pau was in L.A., he was ahead as well. I only say that to say Pau was better than many, including me, gave him credit for. And I think that's the one narrative. Go away from LeBron for a minute. That's the one narrative that has actually made me kind of just laugh on the side, seeing all these Kobe conversations. This notion that, like, he won two titles with the same kind of roster as LeBron had this year.
It's a joke.
It's an absolute joke. He had a sixth man of the year in Lamar Odom, who I believe was a top five lottery pick. He had a NBA All-Star, by the way, was an All-Star. Ron Artest was their best defender, lockdown guy, and came up clutch and big in their Game 7 against Boston to win that second championship. As you mentioned, Andrew Bynum, it's unfortunate that he suffered the injuries he did. And
right.
Who knows how long his dominance runs. He was one of the better young players in the league when he was with the Lakers and they were winning championships. And then you have Pau Gasol. Pau Gasol was really stinking good. I used to watch him in Memphis with Jason Williams, and then even after Jason Williams was gone, those Grizzlies teams weren't talented, man. And he was taking them to 40, 45, 50 wins in the playoffs. And that was Pau Gasol. And Kobe deserves his credit for it. Nobody would take that away. This idea, though, of comparing, like, he beat Boston, right? He beat what people consider a super team. Sure, he did. Let's not act like his team was chopped liver and he had this huge upset.
Let's also not
act like... I believe the second year they beat him, they were the favorites to win that series. They had home court advantage. Kendrick Perkins was injured for game 7.
Thank you.
And, you know, they did what they needed to do. But Kobe was 6-24 in that game.
Yeah.
The other thing that's been bugging me, too, the last couple of days post the finals, and I just, it's interesting the narratives that form with some players. Like, LeBron had a garbage game 4. We would agree on that, right?
Sure.
Not good. I think they all quit. They just mentally were done. They couldn't handle it. You don't excuse a player for having a bad game. I don't do that for anybody. But this idea that because he has a bad game, he is now knocked down a peg from other great players because revisionist history from former players, from former coaches and media types alike will all tell you none of those other great players in their day had bad games. Well, and this is a Mark Jackson Van Gundy line. I don't get it. If I'm going down, I'm going down swinging. Okay. What did Kobe do game 6 in the 08 finals?
Sure, when they lost by like 800 points.
Straight quit. Oh, but Kobe goes down swinging.
All right.
What did he do in the second half against Phoenix when they were up 3-1 and lost that series?
Yeah.
He didn't shoot the ball. Go look at it. I think he finished with 13 or 14 shots.
He just didn't want it.
But, you know, let's not remember that stuff. So the nitpicking is everybody has their own prerogative for where they want to argue, right? Jordan, Kobe, Bird, whatever. That's fine. It's this revisionist history with all these other great players that we have that just, it's not real. It's not a reality.
Right. Revisionist history. And we have it with everybody. And so, maybe we'll have it with LeBron someday.
Maybe
so the next guy comes around and we say, well, LeBron never quit like that. Or LeBron.
And I'll be the first to tell you 2011 finals, he quit. Yeah,
LeBron never would do something like that. It's like, well, no, he did because guess what? They all do.
I love LeBron James. I also believe in being fair.
Yeah.
And the fair thing is to point out that not all these players were perfect, including, by the way, everybody's god, Michael Jordan. So interesting that the comments come from Kobe Bryant. What do you make of it? Where do you put Kobe all time? 55305 is a fan text line. And also we might get to the end of the Warrior Dynasty looming because of this reason. We'll talk about those things next on The Fan.
Kevin Petra is an NFL.com writer, and he wrote a piece going around all the mini camps. Interesting storylines. A lot of holdouts going on. Andrew Luck
Some good news with him. The Seahawks are really excited about their roster. Pete Carroll said it's a 2012-type vibe with them. So we'll talk with Kevin Petra of NFL.com coming up in 10 minutes. And at some point today, I do believe, without diving too much into the politics, I think we need to bring up Dennis Rodman crying on,
dude, this needs to be discussed.
On TV last night.
I don't know how anybody did not watch that. I got word on Twitter that Dennis Rodman was on CNN, and Bumgarner was pitching.
Yeah.
I immediately changed the channel to CNN to see what Dennis Rodman had to say.
He was wearing a MAGA hat, and he was also crying about the Trump.
Popcoin,
he was slinging some popcorn. Yes. Yeah. He was on there, avoided it like the plague.
Oh, it was.
You didn't tune into the worm?
A thing.
God, no.
He started bawling.
Wearing a MAGA hat, popping popcoin, and then crying about the summit. It's like, wow. If I would have, I want people to, that are maybe a little older than us, I want you to honestly answer this. This is not a shot at anything. I just want your answer. If you would so indulge us, what would 1995 or six you have reacted if I came back from the future and said, Trump president, Dennis Rodman, biggest supporter, North Korea summit, crying on national TV. How are we saying, oh, okay, I can kind of see that? Or are we sitting there
having
what?
Too much popcorn?
You have, yeah, what is this popcorn you speak of? And I think you need to lay off of it.
Sometimes you watch the news and you're just kind of like, ah, this is wild. Dennis Rodman's on TV right now.
I was thinking, like CNN does those decade thing, like the 60s, and I think they're doing the 2000s, right?
Stuff,
they're going through the whole thing. I just wait until we get 30, 40 years down the line and they do a 2018. The year that was, because it's been a hell of a year.
It has. Dennis Rodman yesterday crying on CNN. I want to read this thought at the fan text line, because we were talking about Kobe Bryant, who I'll say this too, and Nick's kind of defends Kobe. I have appreciated him a lot later in his career and I think more post-career. I can disagree with him, which I do on this, and I think the narrative around his name is a lot of the times exaggerated, but I do appreciate blunt honesty. And I appreciate guys that, I know a lot of people don't like him for what happened with Colorado, but taking that away.
That's part of it, sure. Right?
I kind of just have come to appreciate who he kind of is as an athlete or ex-athlete now, if that makes any sense.
No, and I'm with you there. And I get what he's trying to say. I just, the notion of make your guys better.
Like, it's just that easy.
Like, just do more, LeBron. Right. Find a way to... There was a stat after
the first... Why was Smush Parker not a long time later?
Right. There was a stat after the first two games about how many open looks LeBron created for his teammates and how terrible they were. It was a Blazer-esque stat. Remember that number in the first four games, all the open looks that they created because guys were double-teaming Dame and CJ, and they were shot like 32% on those wide-open shots, which was the worst in the playoffs. He had that kind of series where he was passing to guys. They were open. That's what I don't get. Like, I understand. There's a lot of criticisms that are fair. If you want to criticize LeBron for being 3-6 in the finals, I'm okay with that, as long as you're putting things into context. If you want to criticize him for being passive aggressive, or the tweets, or some of the stuff that he said throughout the course of his career, or at moments being a bad teammate, I am totally on board with all of that stuff.
Right.
But when you come out with a statement like he just needed to do more, like I did in 2009, I just needed to trust my teammates, it's ridiculous. Did we not watch Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah. By the way, he had Trevor Reese on that team.
Yes.
I forgot he was on that team too.
Kyle Korver, where were you in the NBA Finals, buddy? Kevin Love had one good game, sure, but...
He actually had statistically his best finals yet.
He did, which is a telling stat. But that's where you lose me. If you want to criticize him for certain things, that's fine. But don't act like he could have done more to get more out of the talent around him.
I don't believe it's a fair representation on all. And I don't defend it because I actually think it's childish. I do believe the LeBron passive-aggressive social media stuff is funny as a criticism, in the sense of, I know family and like friends of friends. That's life now. That's how you operate.
People are passive aggressive.
Let's go passive aggressive with a Facebook post. Let's go passive aggressive with an Instagram post. How many people out there honestly confront other people the way they maybe once did? Not that you have to fight, but you have a problem with somebody, and instead of addressing them to their face, you go on Facebook and you basically write a post about them without naming them. So I think that one, as much as I don't like it,
sure,
I think it's funny when people go over their skis on it, because it's like, that's almost society nowadays in general.
That's a really good point. That's how we all operate. The one thing that I will hold against LeBron for these NBA finals, I didn't like the way he handled the end of game one and the overtime of game one.
The huddle and the
I understand being ticked. I understand you had a moment to win that game, sure, and his teammates screwed it for him by missing a free throw and then J.R. Smith not knowing the situation and dribbling out the clock at the end of regulation. That being, I mean, you were still going to overtime. We all knew Golden State was going to win at that moment because Cleveland let that opportunity slip and they should have won at the end. But he seemed to disengage at that moment and just say, right, throw his hands up and pout and stuff. And that's one that I'll hold against him. And I don't care, sure, about quitting in game four. Guys quit all the time. They're down 3-0. I can't blame you. You're not going to win that series. But you had a chance to win game one, and I didn't see that same effort in overtime as I did the first four quarters.
Yeah, one listener says, as a big LeBron fan, I have to say his meltdown after game one was a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Breaking his hand. I mean, you can't do that, man. What are you doing? You're supposed to be the best player in the world.
Right.
You've been composed in all these other crucial moments of your life, and you're breaking your hand. Somebody else saying, Laker fan, don't think Kobe is top three all-time Laker. That being said, all he did was answer a question honestly. Do you expect a different response? No, I love it. I can disagree with it. That's the beauty of it. I can disagree with where he's coming from, but I've enjoyed Kobe being honest. Anytime Kobe Bryant is asked a question, I will always read it and try to listen to it or watch it. So I can disagree, but that doesn't mean I right, want a different answer. Somebody else said, as a Laker fan, all-time Kobe fan, he's top 10, not top 5. Top 5 is for Jordan and LeBron. I admire Kobe for his selfishness and his ability to make impossible shots. That's another part of it. People love that, sure, selfish nature of basketball sometimes of, get the F out of my way, I don't care.
Which is why LeBron has always been more magic than Michael.
Right.
He never was born playing basketball that way. Kobe is in these conversations because he had that same mindset as Michael. You know, you had that Kerr moment in the finals where he's talking to Durant, you know, but Phil Jackson.
Michael getting
He was telling him, yeah, telling him to pass, trust your teammates, that kind of stuff, because Michael wanted to do everything on his own, and so did Kobe. LeBron has always been a Magic Johnson type of player where he's a point guard. That's what he loves most about playing.
Yeah. All right, we got a loaded second hour. There's a lot to get to. Let's go to the National Football League for a while. NFL True or False at 1:30. But we'll kick off hour two with this. Kevin Petra, NFL.com writer. We'll go around the National Football League mini camps, all the big storylines in the NFL with Kevin Petra next, NFL.com. Hour two, Dirt and Sprague ahead on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.